Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This hour, a ranking of every senator and every governor in America. It was done by Morning Consult, and the rankings are based on more than 140,000 interviews with registered voters all over the country. They went to the state houses and examined governors, looking at how Republican governors are doing in liberal states, Democratic governors who may be potential candidates to run in 2020. So that's interesting. They found with the senators that some of the biggest drops in net approval came in some unexpected places, with Republican senators in reliably red states and Democrats in safely blue ones seeing large drops. Joining us this hour to talk about all these ratings is Cameron Easley, a senior reporter at the Policy News and polling outlet Morning Consult. Prior to that, Easley was the managing editor at Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Are there certain figures who are capturing your political fancy, senators or governors? And why is it that certain people are ranked very, very highly? There are some that are doing extremely well and others that you would think, you know, should be doing better in their states. But we'll talk about why as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at KDunnShow. Cameron, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for having me.
So how often do you do these?
So we do these every quarter. Every day we're in the field talking to thousands of registered voters across the country and asking them what they think of their elected officials. And we accrue enough data over time, apply survey weights, and we release those results quarterly. So for our new edition of the senator's ranking and the governor's rankings, we talked to over 140,000 registered voters, including more than 3,000 in Wisconsin.
Oh, interesting. So I don't know if you asked this kind of question, if your data can glean this. Are people happier usually with their senators than they are with their governors, or vice versa?
Usually what we find is that senators are a little bit more unknown by registered voters across the country. You know, governors are a lot more high profile. The things they work on a daily basis have a bigger impact on the everyday lives of voters across the country. So that's one of the main things we see. One of the things we also see is that senators tend to be approved by at least a plurality of their constituents, whereas governors you get a little bit more of a big difference. Someone's either very, very well liked or very disliked.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the senator who is the most liked, and I don't know if this is a surprise to people or not, but Bernie Sanders ranks number one on your list.
Yeah, I mean, Bernie Sanders, obviously a household name in Vermont. That's a very liberal state and has been for a long time, and he's also been very clever to avoid some of the conservative pitfalls that Democrats in the state might fall foul of, such as gun rights and those sort of things. One thing we did see is that when Senator Sanders was on the campaign trail for much of last year, some of his numbers did go down a little bit. Perhaps some of those Vermonters felt a little bit neglected on more issues specific to the state. But since then, he's seen a bump since the first quarter, and he's approved of by almost roughly three quarters of Vermonters.
Mm. And when we go down the list, what is it that makes any particular senator have really wildly popular views from many of their constituents?
Well, you know, typically you're going to find senators who have an ideology that matches with the voters of their state. They tend to be the most approved of elected officials. Deeply conservative senators in deeply red states are often well off. You've got that with Senator Tom Barrasso in Wyoming and many other of those mountain states, which are very conservative. And then in a lot of your bluer states, you have a similar picture.
Susan Collins, let's talk about her just because she's been so front and center in telling people exactly what she thinks about health care and has been one of the moderate Republicans who's stopped this whole thing from proceeding. Her approval rating, it's an indication that her constituents are hearing from her what they want to hear.
Yeah, she's extremely popular, and, I mean, she's really been out in front calling for bipartisan work, bipartisan solutions to the problems with Obamacare. She's also considering running for governor in 2018. And if you look at the current Maine Republican governor, Paul LePage's numbers, he's disapproved of by 48%, and her numbers are much better than that. So that suggests that if she wanted to make a bigger impact in Maine and take over as the state's top elected official, she could probably do so.
Mm-hmm. Both senators in Hawaii, number two and number three on your list, people in Hawaii like both their senators.
They do. That's, you know, like I was saying earlier, that's Hawaii is a very blue state. The court system there has been big in tamping down on a lot of President Trump's agenda through the courts, such as the controversial travel ban. And in Hawaii, both Mazie Hirono and Senator Brian Schatz sport approval ratings just shy of 70%.
That's pretty high. John Hovind from North Dakota. I don't know very much about him. He's liked.
He is well liked. He's another relatively moderate member of the Republican caucus. He's another one of those Republican senators who has been a problem for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in terms of securing the necessary support for his attempts to overhaul and replace significant parts of Obamacare. One of the common threads you've seen in a lot of those states is like people like Hovind and Collins represent states with large rural populations.
Mm.
The Medicaid expansion has been key for a lot of those hospitals, and that's one of the main reasons that they've been against efforts to upend the Medicaid expansion, which the CBO projected could leave as many as 23 million people without health insurance by 2026.
Do you see any pattern in all of these polls that the more moderate members are more popular, or does that not hold true?
It doesn't always hold true. It just kind of depends on the makeup of the state. If you're in a more moderate state, then being more moderate tends to help you play both sides and improve your standing that way. One of the most interesting things that I've found consistently in our rankings regarding governor's rankings is the two most popular governors in the country, Charlie Baker of Massachusetts and Larry Hogan of Maryland. Those are Republican governors in deeply blue states. And they're bipartisan deal makers. They largely eschew the national political scene. They've been against Republican efforts in Congress to overhaul Obamacare. They didn't endorse President Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential campaign. They largely just try to stay behind the scenes and keep things ticking over smoothly in their states. And as a result of that, they're very well liked by their constituents. 71% of Bay Staters approve of Charlie Baker, and 68% of Marylanders approve of Larry Hogan.
Goodness, those numbers are really high.
They are.
I read an interesting article this morning about the Democratic governors seeking a middle path to the White House. Many elected Democrats have shifted left since the party's shattering defeat, turning to more like Bernie Sanders kinds of politics. But there are people at this governor's convention who are moderate. One of them, and tell me what you know about these people, Governor Steve Bullock of Montana, who's already created a federal political action committee. There's talk that Governor Terry McAuliffe may give President Trump a run for his money in 2020. And Gina Raimondo, is that how you pronounce it, of Rhode Island may be also
right.
Open. Are they all pretty moderate Democrats or not?
Well, I think Steve Bullock is certainly the most moderate of that bunch. As a governor of Montana, you would expect so. That's more of a generally red state, although Democrats have had success there. The Democratic senator who ran the Senate Democrats campaign arm last cycle, John Tester, is up for re-election there this year. But Democrats that are successful in Montana have been able to separate themselves from the national Democratic brand. That's different than what you would see in Rhode Island, where Gina Raimondo is perhaps a lot better thought of when you step away from the state than at home. She's actually one of the most unpopular governors in the country, based on her Republicans. She's underwater among Rhode Islanders. 47% disapprove of her.
Oh, my.
Compared with 43% who approve. So, I mean, it's very, very early to talk about 2020. You know, you've got some other relatively moderate governors that might be involved in that conversation. John Hickenlooper of Colorado, for example. Who knows what could happen in North Carolina with Roy Cooper, who just replaced a Republican governor, Pat McCrory, last fall after the fallout of House Bill 2, a controversial bathroom bill. So it's very early to tell, but there's definitely a selection of moderates and more regular, typical liberals in the stable for Democrats to choose from as we get closer to 2020.
Let's go to Wisconsin for a moment before we go to phone calls. How are Ron Johnson, Tammy Baldwin, and Scott Walker doing?
So the senators are about in the same boat. Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin are both approved of by 41% of Wisconsin voters, or roughly the same amount disapprove of them. That's 35% and 36%. Governor Walker is 8 points underwater, 43% approve and 51% disapprove. Obviously, makes sense to watch Walker and Baldwin a little bit closer since they will be on the ballot next year.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that there are some independents. Bernie Sanders is an independent, going back to the senators, and also a guy who's really been making the rounds of television with the Russia investigation, Angus King. He seems to be available frequently, and he's a very well-spoken man.
Yeah, as a former governor and a statesman, he certainly doesn't shirk from the spotlight, and he's a veteran of the Senate, and is well thought of on the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is really fashioned a bipartisan approach in investigating all this. So his profile has gone up in recent times as well. He's approved of by 62% and voters. So he's right around in the same ballpark as Susan Collins.
Let's welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're looking at the popularity of U.S. senators and governors among people in their home states. This is a quarterly survey of many, many people, and it is done by Morning Consult, and Cameron Easley is our guest. He's a senior reporter at Morning Consult, and we're looking at senators who are popular and talking a little bit more about why that may be the case, what's happening with Republican governors and Democratic governors, and have people changed their minds with any rapidity of any of these senators or governors fairly recently? And what is it they're doing that allows people to say, hey, I really like you, or I don't like you? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. We'll be with you in a moment on the Ideas Network. All right, let's go to phone calls for our guest. Ann in Green Bay is our first caller. Hello, Ann.
Hello. Well, I am a staunch Democrat, so I strongly disapprove of Walker and Johnson, but I've also decided I'm not going to support Tammy Baldwin this election.
Why is that, Ann?
Because she is going in with Johnson, who I have no use for, with legislation to delist the wolves, and that just disgusts me. So because I'm a big environmentalist and a naturalist, that is the reason why I'm not supporting her this election.
Did you used to support her?
I did. Supported her financially, and I voted for her, but not anymore.
And when you talk about the environment, what is this? The environmental, what is it?
She wants to delist the wolves. She's going
to delist
the wolves with Johnson to
delist
the wolves.
I didn't hear the wolves part, which was important for me to hear.
I said she. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. So who will you be supporting? Would you like to have her?
I will be sitting that particular ballot out.
All right.
I will vote, but I will not be voting for that state senate position.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ann, for your call.
Yep.
Yeah. When you do surveys of people, do you find that there are certain issues that are front and center? There are a lot of people who are voting on one or maybe two issues and determining whether or not they like their governor or senator on the basis of that?
Well, we do. We consistently find that the two biggest issues for voters are the economy and national security. That is typically followed by health care and then seniors issues. As for environmental issues, energy issues, that usually constitutes a much smaller proportion of the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a share of that as well, as evidenced by the most recent call.
Right.
In terms of Democratic support for Senator Baldwin in the state, she has the approval of 67% of Democrats, 16% disapprove of her.
Hmm. Should that be higher?
That's a good question. It is higher among the base for Johnson. He's approved of by 78% of Wisconsin Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, Governor Walker approved of by 83% of Wisconsin Republicans. Some of that could be down to timing in the election cycle, though. Senator Baldwin has only been in office for the past few years. Senator Johnson just came off a re-election, so that may be some sort of name ID situation going on there. But it also could be some Democrats being turned off to Senator Baldwin tying herself to President Trump on some of these issues, such as Biden and our American policies.
And what about people who have really made a name for themselves and their newcomers, be they governors or senators?
So I'd say you pretty much see across the board similar numbers among the newer senators. Some that it's really more about the national spotlight for folks who have jumped out since the beginning of the year. Kamala Harris, a big one.
Yes.
As a voice on the Senate Intelligence Committee, there's been a few situations in which she's been shouted down by the chairman and some of her Republican colleagues that have provoked a pushback. Really, it seems like a lot of the freshman Democrats have been a little bit more in the background so far. You've seen a lot of Senator Schumer a long time. Of course, as the minority leader. You're seeing Elizabeth Warren, someone with a little bit more experience leading the fray more so than some of those freshman Democratic senators.
What are Harris's numbers?
Her numbers are, she is approved of by 51% of Californians, which is the same share who support the senior senator from the state, Dianne Feinstein.
Hmm.
Still about 25% of Californians don't know or have no opinion on Kamala Harris. So there you see where, sometimes these things in D.C. don't necessarily filter all the way down to the ground in some of these states around the country.
Hmm. They're not watching the hearings, are they?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah. Matt is next in Onalaska. Hello, Matt.
Oh, hi. I was wondering what's going on with Jennifer Granholm. People keep asking who's the next leader of the Democratic Party, and they're sort of fishing around for names, and her name keeps popping up in the back of my head. I mean, what's she up to?
Former governor of Michigan. What is she up to now? I see her on TV.
I'm not exactly sure what she's up to now. I think she teaching at a university somewhere?
I don't know.
Give me 1 second on that.
You're looking it up, huh?
Looking it up.
That internet is so darned handy, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't hear her name floated a lot. I have heard people, there are a lot of people who are very impressed with her. Getting businesses back, she really speaks to industry in a way that may be important for a Democrat to do.
One thing I can tell you is that she fared a lot better as governor than Governor Snyder has. He is still far underwater on the back of the whole Flint water crisis. Just 38% of Michigan Snyder, well, more than half disapprove.
Ooh, is he up for re-election?
He is not.
He's not. Oh, that's a bad approval rating. All right, well, let us know when you find out about Jennifer, but we're going to move on, and let's go to Jim in Rice Lake. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm forming the Draft Kathleen to Come Back committee. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I have a puppy, Jim. What would I do with him?
Well, we're just going to draft you so you won't be able to retire in August. It's an unavoidable and overwhelmingly popular committee that I just want to let you know about.
Thanks, Jim, but I think my mind's made up.
All right, well, that aside.
All right, go ahead.
That, is it, I was worrying about your guest view of Cory Booker from New Jersey. And then finally, aren't the Republicans, I know Bobby Kennedy said that 6 months is a lifetime in politics, and he was right, but isn't, like, wouldn't there be like a Trump factor? You're for him or against him? My Lord, we're getting tired of him every day, all the issues swirling around him. Isn't that something for the Republicans to worry about? And I'll be interested in your guest comments.
Thanks, Jim, for the call.
So to get to Senator Booker first.
Okay.
He is well liked in New Jersey. That's not atypical. It's a pretty strongly blue state. 50% of New Jerseyans approve of him, while 32% disapprove. And he's also he's been spoken about as a potential 2020 contender. He gave a reasonably rousing speech at the Democratic convention in Philadelphia last summer, and he's certainly one to keep an eye on for the future. As for the relationship between congressional Republicans and the president, I think, you know, that's been a bit of a rocky road since well early on into the campaign. They, from time to time, you know, they may rebuke his comments, but, you know, for the most part, they're gonna stick with him as long as they think he's gonna sign the bills that they can send to the White House. Now, obviously, so far that's been a struggle, and we have some polling data that shows that as the year has gone on, registered voters across the country have begun to lose faith in Republicans in Congress to handle some of these big issues. They started out with 20-point edges on Democrats back in March on issues such as the economy, jobs, health care, national security, and we've seen their numbers dwindle across all those subjects. At this point, you have Democrats holding a 7 to 10-point edge consistently on health care and polling just within the margin of error of Republicans on the economy and jobs, which, you know, is really surprising since that's really been the Republican message for several years now. But I guess I would say to if there's going to be some kind of straw that breaks the camel's back on President Trump, I think you might wait and see if things really start breaking down for the Republican agenda in Congress. If the GOP base, if polling starts showing the GOP base abandoning President Donald Trump in droves, which you haven't seen yet, you know, he's still pulling in the mid-80s among Republicans. So they're not going to open themselves up to primary challenges or any disgruntlement from their own base. But if you see those numbers go south, or if you see serious problems for the agenda in Congress, you might start to see the worm turn a little bit.
And wouldn't it take really a significant downturn in the economy for that to happen? Because you said that was a front and center issue for most people in his base. And things are going along, you know, not terrific, but okay.
Yeah, still on, you know, some of the longest consecutive job gains going far back into the Obama administration. The stock market is still has a pretty rosy outlook about what's happening. So as long as things are like this, he probably doesn't have much to worry about. You know, of course, things could change if there's some kind of a Democratic wave election next year. With everybody running against Trump at the top of the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
In 18 of the past 20 midterm elections, the president's party has lost seats in those 18 elections. The president's party has lost an average of about 33 seats, and Democrats need 24 seats to take back the House. So, I mean, the House is in play. Who knows what's going to happen? If they were to retake the House, I'd expect you'd hear a lot more about potential impeachment coming up.
Oh, I'm sure you would. Yeah. Jim, thanks for the call. Let's go to Carlita in Wisconsin, but from Texas. Hi, Carlita.
Hi. Yes, I'm traveling through Wisconsin. We're going up to St. Germain on a vacation.
Oh, great. That's nice.
From Texas.
Great.
Okay, wanted to find out about what is the rating for Greg Abbott of Texas, and also how about the governor of Illinois?
Those are interesting. Do you like the governor of Texas, Carlita?
If you could. Well, I'll tell you that Texans like the governor of Texas.
They do.
Texas. He's approved of by 60% of Longhorns, while 27% disapproved. His approval rating was down just slightly from the first quarter, but that's still very, very, very strong. Over in Illinois, it's a different story. Governor Rauner, who, you know, was elected in 2014 as kind of a Trump-like figure, a business guy who said he was going to disrupt the status quo and change business as usual in Springfield. He's underwater by 9 points. 40% of Illinoisans approve of him, 49% disapprove. They've just recently had the latest iteration of their budget wrangling. So he's got a target on his back going into next year, and he's probably got an uphill climb to re-election.
Yeah. I read somewhere that one of the Kennedys is thinking of running against him. Do you know anything more about that?
I've heard a little bit about that. I think that was that one of the Joes?
I think so. Yes, I think so.
I mean, you know, that's a household political name and among Democrats, and the title definitely would be at his back.
Right.
Given that it's a blue state and given Trump's poor approval numbers there, I think you could expect some kind of a tide to lift all boats on that
right.
side.
Right. Yeah, that state's having problems. Carlita, do you like the governor of Texas, or should I not ask? Oh, Carlita, are you gone? No, I don't know. Hope you have fun in St. Germain. It's pretty there. Let's go to Mike in Madison. Hello, Mike.
Hello. I was wondering what your guest thinks of the district redrawing that has to occur for Wisconsin and how that might affect other states and the election in 2018. And how does one file papers in a district that might end up getting redrawn?
Oh, that's, yeah, your phone was kind of cutting out there. Did you get most of that, Cameron?
I did. You know, I don't know a lot about the specifics of the actual Wisconsin case. I will say that, you know, Democrats are obviously making redistricting a huge priority.
Mm-hmm.
That's another reason that 2018 is big. They're trying to get in control some of these governors' mansions across the country and improve their numbers in these state legislatures ahead of the redrawing of the lines in the census in 2020. Former Attorney General Eric Holder has been tasked by making a real push toward that, and it's certainly a high priority for them. But as far as how the cases in Wisconsin play, I'm afraid I don't have too much information on that.
It could be a really big deal, depending on what the Supreme Court does here, but we don't know. We don't have any inkling at this point. Mike, thanks for the call. Carol, Green Bay, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Cameron.
Hi, Carol.
You know, I would like to know what's happening with some of these guys that have made just outrageous comments, and you haven't even tried to walk them back. One is Steve Kane from Iowa. His latest is take the money out of the food stamp program to pay for the wall. And then the other one is Senator Labrador, I think, he's out west, saying nobody dies because they don't have health coverage. The other guy is Representative Marshall, I think from Kansas, saying people who are poor don't want health care. What about these guys?
You're referring to Rep. Steve King of Iowa and Rep. Raul Labrador of Idaho, who's going to be running for governor there, actually.
Hmm.
But these are guys who are among the most conservative members of the House Republican Conference, known for colorful comments at times, and I think that's a reflection of the electorate that sends them to Washington. As long as you know, those guys have been in the House for a while now, and they keep getting reelected. So they feel like whatever they're saying, something must be working.
What about, he's figured prominently in this health care debate, and I guess that the governor of Nevada was influential in how Dean Heller voted on this. Dean Heller, what are his, in Nevada, is he a vulnerable senator? Is he popular?
He is vulnerable. He's one of the lesser-known senators. Is he's approved of by 41% of voters, while 33% disapprove.
Uh-huh.
26% had no opinion or didn't know anything about Senator Heller. Governor Sandoval, by comparison, is one of the 10 most popular governors.
Oh, is he really?
He is.
Interesting.
He has the backing of, let me see here, 62% of Nevada voters.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as one of those Republican governors from the Medicaid expansion states, he, along with, you know, John Kasich in Ohio, Charlie Baker in Massachusetts, Larry Hogan in Maryland, they just signed a letter, sent a letter to Congress today with some other Democrats saying to just totally, telling Republicans to totally abandon their plans and to come to the table and work with Democrats. And you can't help but feel like that's had an effect on, you know, senators like Dean Heller in
right.
Nevada, or senators like Rob Portman
mm-hmm.
in Ohio, who's just won re-election.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we certainly cannot discount their influence. The thing about Heller is, you know, after he came out so hard because of the Medicaid cuts a couple weeks ago, he has not come out against the newer version. So when Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas and Senator Mike Lee of Utah came out and killed that version last night, I think, you know, that might give Democrats some campaign ad material that Heller wasn't one of the first to come out on that iteration.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I mean, I think Senator Heller is widely considered the most Republican, the most vulnerable Republican senator up for re-election
mm-hmm.
from the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona could be vulnerable to a Republican primary, given his anti-Trump stance and just Arizona's extremely conservative state. Flake and McCain are two of the most unpopular senators in the country, largely because they're disapproved of by a lot of their own voters. But the story in Arizona for years has been, if they can get out of the primary, then they're breezing through the general election. And I'd expect the same thing to happen for Flake, whereas Heller may have real problems in the general election. Jackie Rosen, a former state senator who just joined the House, is running against Heller at the urging of former Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid, you know, who has a vaunted political machine in the state. So that's certainly one to watch.
Yeah. Why don't people like John McCain in Arizona?
Well, I think the biggest issue for John McCain among those Republican voters is he's not conservative enough for them.
Oh, I see.
I think they, you know, he's a longtime senator, you know, familiarity breeds contempt on one hand, and then on the other, I mean, someone that's been around that long is more prone to making bipartisan deals. You compare that to, you know, the House members that Arizona has been sending to Congress over the past few years. You're looking at some of the founders of the House Freedom Caucus that is ultra conservative. A lot of those guys who like to criticize Republican senators for not pushing hard enough and not changing the rules and trying to ram through a strongly Republican agenda. I think that's the main explanation.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to our neighboring state of Minnesota. Both Al Franken and Amy Klobuchar are pretty popular. They're doing all right, huh? Are you there, Cameron?
I'm sorry. I thought we were taking a call.
Oh, no. I would just ask a question. Minnesota, Al Franken and Amy Klobuchar.
Yes, I'm sorry. Both Senator Klobuchar and Senator Franken enjoy popular approval rating, 59% back Klobuchar, 56% back Franken. Their numbers were down just slightly from the first quarter of the year, but nothing to be alarmed about. They've been a couple of the senators on the front lines against Donald Trump and the Republican agenda, and Minnesotans largely seem to be receptive to that.
Isn't it, as you go through these, it's really amazing how different the states are, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, you need to look no further than the Electoral College map from the 2016 presidential election. It's very clear that there's something of two Americas.
Yes.
Right now in the United States.
Absolutely. Sue in Wisconsin somewhere. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
Hi.
My question really is a little bit out of where you're at right now. My question is about the validity of your polling. and what kind of demographics you used, what kind did you do phone polling. The reason I'm asking this is the polls were so off in the 2016 election, and also in the state of Wisconsin in terms of predictability. How do I know that what you're saying to me is valid?
So we our polling is online-based. We use reputable survey vendors from around the country to reach people. We never poll the same person twice. We're talking to at least 1,000 different people every day. And we weight our numbers to the U.S. Population Survey from 2012 and apply weights based on that. I can only speak for our own polling. But on the national level, we predicted Hillary Clinton to win the popular vote by 3 percentage points. She won it by just over 2 percentage points. So that's well within our survey's 2-point margin of error. The callers, you're definitely not wrong about there being some serious problems with the state level polling, which led to some big surprises. But we did not poll in the state level for the election.
But you're saying that you're nationally, and you're using a lot of various different metrics, is much more valid?
I think pretty much all the main pollsters are using the same kind of weights and surveys in terms of trying to predict electoral turnout. One difference between our polls and some others is, like as I said, we're online. So we found, we actually did some mode testing during the GOP primary. We found a pronounced bump for Trump online versus on the phone, and we attribute this to a thing we call social desirability bias. It seems like people were less likely to admit to backing Donald Trump on the phone whenever they were on the internet. I think when you ask yourself, you know, what's more like the voting process when you're alone in a booth, is it answering something online, or is it saying something in front of other people when you're by the dinner table with your family? But the effect that we found in the general election was muted by comparison to what we saw in the primaries.
And what's Jennifer Granholm up to? Did you find that?
All I'm seeing is that she's a political contributor on MSNBC. So I'm not exactly sure.
All right. So, thanks, Sue, for your call. Pat in New Berlin. Hi.
Hi. How are you, Kathleen?
Fine, Pat.
And I'm sorry, too, that you're retiring. I've always enjoyed your show.
Thanks, Pat.
Yes, I saw an interview with Gavin Newsom, Lieutenant Governor of California, recently, and I was rather impressed. How does he stack up in your polling?
I'm sorry, that broke up a little bit for me. Can you repeat the question?
Gavin Newsom, California.
We do not have any polling on Gavin Newsom. Because
Lieutenant Governor of California. Just wondered what you knew about him.
I think he's, you know, one of a number of Democrats primed to jump into that race. You've got the mayor of LA who's even been considered as a possible presidential candidate. But Gavin Newsom is certainly a strong contender.
When I saw him, I thought, there's a young Democrat that I think should go far. Very articulate.
I think it's interesting that Garcetti has gotten a lot of the national attention.
We need some new faces. I
alluded Newsom so far.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for the call. And are the Democrats grooming some new faces? What do you think? Are they going to be ready for the midterms? Are there a whole group of people coming in who never thought of politics before and are ready to go?
Well, you have a little bit of a log jam on the House side. There have been some persistent calls from some of the backbenchers in the House Democratic Caucus for Nancy Pelosi and her leadership team to step aside.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that is just based on her kind of her role as a boogeyman for Republican attack ads, which seems to, you know, the whole fire Pelosi thing and running against Pelosi you certainly can't argue with the results over the past several years. So there is a concern about that. Obviously on the Senate side, you've got some up and comers. I mean, Elizabeth Warren seems to have a good bit of momentum behind her. But in the short term, you know, going into 2018, Democrats have time to work these things out. That the 2018 election is likely to be a referendum on President Donald Trump. Most midterm elections are a referendum on the president of the party at the time. So it's certainly a great question, but I think there's plenty of time for Democrats to work that out. And, you know, I think the main issue is, you know, which way do you go from here? There's, you know, you've got Senator Sanders saying that you need to push left and talk more about a economic focused message, whereas it seems like, you know, the neoliberal message for the past few years has focused more on social issues and, you know, issues of healthcare. But that's certainly a debate worth having. We did do a state of the party poll a couple months ago, and it showed 13% of Democratic Party voters identify as Democratic Socialists, which is what Sanders likes to call himself. Another 29% call themselves liberals, and then 42% call themselves moderate Democrats. So even looking at the polling, you can see that the party is at a bit of a crossroads right now, with, you know, 29 plus 13 adding up to the same share of Democrats who consider themselves moderates.
Did you break that down? Do you know how many people, young people, who really supported Bernie in huge numbers, identified as Democratic Socialists?
Yes, we did see a bigger uptick among voters aged 18 to 29, as opposed to those in the 35 to 44, 45 to 54, and 65 and up.
More phone calls momentarily. Cameron Easley is our guest. He is a senior reporter at the polling outlet and Policy News Morning Consult. We're talking about the latest that they've done, America's most and least popular senators, and also they looked at governors, and we're hearing the results. And going beyond that, too, finding out about these people. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. There are some lines open if you would like to reach us. This is the Ideas Network. Okay, let's go to Scott in Winona. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm going to miss you so much.
I haven't talked to you in a while. I miss you, Scott.
Well, you know, this is interesting that you should have this program at this particular time, because I crossed that big river, and part of the reason I did was because I was looking for a little cooler place to live, and I just absolutely am just completely, completely pleased with the two senators and the governor that we've got over on this side of the river. I like Tammy Baldwin a lot, but, you know, this is a nice change.
Really? So you moved because of the political environment in Wisconsin?
Actually, there were a lot of factors, but certainly after the last election, to be honest with you, I just couldn't believe the way it went. And, you know, I'd seen that going from purple to red, and and when I looked across the river, I said, you know, this is a place that actually works, that has a budget surplus, and has people who, think that, I mean, even with a Republican-controlled state legislature, these are still people who are kind of working to get things done, and it is such a change, I cannot tell you how much I... And Winona's, another river community that I just love being in. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the right time to make the move.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand about the right time to make a move. I'm going to do this.
On a greater level, you know better, too, don't you?
Yeah. Hey,
I wish you all the best. If I don't talk to you before, I've still been listening. You know, I'm kind of busy in the afternoons. But if I don't talk to you before you leave, Kathleen, all the best in everything you do. You are so treasured.
Thank you, Scott, so much. And I've loved talking to you. I've always loved your questions. Thank you. And all the best to you. Oh, my. All right, let's go to Ned. And Ned is next in Watersmeet. Hi, Ned.
Hi there. I'm just wondering how our Senator Stabenow, W. Stabenow, is going to do against Kid Rock.
You Yeah, I think up here in D.C. we're just trying to figure out if this Kid Rock thing is still a real thing or not.
You think it's a real thing?
He's going to be real. You watch. He's the next Donald Trump.
You think it is a real thing, Ned, huh?
That's right. Except for he drinks.
Uh-huh. Well, are there any other unusual people who may be entering races?
You know, I will say that Senator Stabenow, she's got a reasonably high disapproval rate. So, you know, never say never. After the past 18 months, who knows?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much for the call. All right. So when you look at all of these, we haven't even covered all of them. I guess we didn't talk about some of the least favorable senators, too. We should talk about some of those. And we haven't talked about Mitch McConnell, for heaven's sake, who's been all over the place in the news with all this health care. He's not doing very well among his constituents. His approval ratings aren't great, are they?
Definitely the least popular senator in America.
Is he really? Oh, my goodness.
Every time we've done these rankings, Mitch McConnell has topped the highest disapproval. 48% of Kentuckians disapprove of him, compared with 41% who approve. You know, he just came off a pretty bruising reelection run in 2014, defeating now Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin. So Governor McConnell is not popular, but he is the most powerful man in the Senate, and I don't think he would trade being popular for having to lose that title.
Mm. How about the other senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul?
Senator Paul is also among the most unpopular. 38% disapprove of him, although he is approved of by 50% of Kentucky voters. I've really found his stance on the Obamacare repeal effort among the more interesting. You know, it's clearly Obamacare and the Medicaid expansion worked better in Kentucky than it did in many other states. Yet he's managed to basically criticize any attempt to overhaul it as not conservative enough. It's almost in a situation where he gets to have his cake and eat it too. He gets to, you know, retain his conservative credentials while also not worrying about the practical impact that the legislation could have on his constituents. So I think what he's done has actually been pretty clever.
Hmm. Claire McCaskill, how long has she been a senator? She's been quite a while, hasn't it?
Yes. She was expected to... most expected her not to be able to win in 2012. There was the whole Todd Akin fiasco,
right,
which helped her stay in D.C. And it looks like she could get a difficult opponent this time around. Josh Hawley, the newly elected Secretary of State there, he's a vet, former professor. He's like 36 years old or something like that.
Mm.
But, you know, she's been counted out before and won. But
yes,
that's certainly one of the races to watch going into next year when Republicans are on offense in a lot of these Senate seats.
Mm-hmm.
46% of Missourians approve of Claire McCaskill and 38% disapprove. She's the seventh least popular senator.
Mm, interesting. And for the caller wondering about Jennifer Granholm, another caller said that she is Canadian, so she can't run for president. I didn't know that about her. Well, thank you very much. This was fun.
Yeah, it was. Thanks for having me, Kathleen. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks very much. I'd say we'll have you on again, but I won't be here that much longer, so you could be on again somewhere else, I'm sure. Cameron Easley is a senior reporter, and he works for Morning Consult. I think we can probably put this poll up. You may find it interesting. Got a lot of calls on it on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. He was managing editor before this at the Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call, America's most and least popular senators and also governors is what they looked at in their latest poll. Thanks to Colleen Leahy for producing this hour, and thanks to Gretchen Brown for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios for all of your calls and interest. Thank you always. Remember, tomorrow during this hour, Ulysses Grant, it's a great book. We're going to do more presidential history.